passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to this week's Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague Peter Flaherty. Millie is off this week because Baseball America has a policy about not working on your birthday. Did you know that, Peter?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. And happy birthday, Millie.
That's that is in the like company rule book somewhere. So Millie's celebrating her birthday. So no Millie this week. But Peter and I have a lot to go over. It was a busy week around college baseball last week. You had, a huge series, Tennessee and Kentucky, Wake Forest and Florida State. You had some upsets, especially out west. So we're going to get to all of that and then look ahead to another exciting week. Some more big series, some rivalry series. We've got Oregon and Oregon State. We've got Texas and Oklahoma. A lot of fun things on the diamond this week. So we're going to get to it all here on this edition Baseball America College Podcast. And remember to subscribe and follow the Baseball America Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcast, Spotify. We're on all the major platforms, so hit that follow or subscribe button. Peter, the place I guess I want to start is Tennessee and Kentucky. Last weekend in Lexington, it was a showdown of the two top teams in the SEC East standings, and it was a really fun series. Kentucky fans absolutely showed out. They set program records for single game attendance on Friday and Saturday. And even on Sunday, their attendance total would have been a record if not for Friday and Saturday. So the three highest attended games in Kentucky baseball history all happened this weekend. And they saw everyone that came out saw great games. Friday night, Kentucky came back and won it late in Saturday's game. It was a close affair. Tennessee pulls it out. And then in the rubber game, back and forth, haymakers, Christian Moore going off for the Vols. Kavarius Tears finally hits what proves to be the game-winning home run. And Tennessee wins the series in Lexington. Just a fantastic show for both of those teams. It felt absolutely like a showdown between the two top teams in the SEC East in the second half of the season. Like it was everything you would want.
Yeah, it was an extremely cool environment. Like the Kentucky fans, as you said, were outstanding. The Tennessee fans traveled well. And I came away from this weekend almost feeling, and it's crazy to say after a series loss, almost better about Kentucky than I did heading into it. Like, it was their biggest test by a pretty wide margin this year. Like, I was a little curious as to how they do and how they look. And man, when they jumped out to a 6-2 lead on Sunday, they were in a really good spot to rack up a huge top five series win. And the wind was really blowing out to right center. Tennessee got a couple of balls up into the jet stream and they carried out. But even in the ninth, they fought back. Mitch Daly and Ryan Nicholson hit a couple of home runs and they lost 13-11. But before moving on to Tennessee, Kentucky is very much for real. And I saw that this weekend. The offense is extremely balanced. It's crazy. Like, there's not a ton of star power on the team. Like, I guess you could say Ryan Waldschmidt or, make an argument for a couple of other guys, but it's just really mature, advanced at bats. They all put the ball in play. And they really, really push the pace on opposing teams. And if it wasn't for kind of a rare stumble by the bullpen, they'd probably be sitting inside the top five of our rankings. But I feel like on our top 25 call, we even debated for a hot second, like moving Kentucky up a spot, but it wasn't in the cards. But like, that's how good I thought they looked this weekend. They're like, again, tough series loss, but they're in a really good spot in general.
I think before we move on to Tennessee here, I know you want to get to the Vols, but the Cats, like you said, it's mature. They're an older group, top to bottom, offense, on the mound, wherever. And it shows, like, they have a lot of confidence, and they should. They came into this weekend 14-1 and in the SEC. You know, they play with a lot of energy. They play with a lot of confidence at home. You know, they're built for that ballpark, and that ballpark, like, the wind was blowing out, so it wasn't playing the way it often plays, but they've also showed over the last couple of weeks that they can hit home runs. That, you know, I said it a lot that, you know, hey, they hit 11 home runs and there's at Auburn 2 weeks ago. And I mean, it continued over the last week, both at Louisville in the midweek, and then, you know, against Tennessee, they were continuing to drive the ball. And if their offense is going to include that going forward, that just makes them all the more dangerous. You know, in Tennessee, they got to the pitching, and hey, that's fine. Tennessee can hit, you know, like, it's going to happen. And I, you know, you don't want to lose a home series. I don't know how much moral victories are a thing for a team that, again, was 14-1 in conference play, but, like, they went pretty much toe to toe with Tennessee, a team with Omaha experience, a team that, you know, everyone expected to be good this year and is, and Kentucky came up just a little bit short. But, you know, I think that you have to continue to feel good about where they are going forward. They're built for the ballpark. They're going to play at home in June. And if this weekend was any indication of what kind of support they're going to get, and, like, yes, you made a good point, Peter, like, Tennessee fans traveled well. That was a part of the crowd. But, you know, I think that every Kentucky fan that was at those games this weekend is going to come away saying, like, that was a lot of fun. Like, not only is the on-field product good, but, like, I think they've done a really good job at, like, making it a fun experience for everyone at the ballpark. And, like, I would bet that those fans are going to continue to come back. Maybe they came for the rivalry, and that's cool. Like, that's part of what draws people into college sports. But I think that was probably the start of something bigger in terms of Kentucky and, you know, love from the fans for this year's team.
Yeah, and barring something unforeseen, that is going to be a really, really cool and rowdy regional environment that, one, will be outstanding to be at in person, and then even just taking it on TV, it'll be really cool. And then Tennessee, I mean, Tennessee is Tennessee. We've touched on them at length at this point, both this week and in prior weeks. Like, along with A&M, for me, they're one of the most complete, probably the most complete team in the country. The lineup is extremely high powered. Everyone can drive the baseball. Probably the MVP of this weekend, outside of Christian Moore, who just went nuclear, the headlined by the 3 home run performance with 6 RBIs on Sunday, was Aaron Combs out of the bullpen. 4 2/3 shutout innings with 7 Ks in Saturday's game. And without his performance on the mound, we could be talking about an entirely different result, because pitching wasn't necessarily the star of the weekend, and he was one of the only arms who really shut it down on the mound for Tennessee. So another outstanding win for the Vols. They keep rolling along here. They have a little bit of a lighter weekend against Missouri. But again, you can't really take anyone too lightly in the SEC, but that's as kind of a forgiving series as you'll get. So they keep trucking along, but was very, very impressed with Tennessee. Yes, very impressed with Tennessee, but very, very impressed by Kentucky.
I think the Coombs shout out is a good one. Drew Beam just wasn't quite at his best, but the way that Tennessee managed the series on the mound was, they did a good job with it. That was a big part of it, you know, for him to come in and play that way, pitch that way on Saturday, because, you know, the way Tennessee has this rotation set up, it's that Drew Beam is really supposed to carry the biggest load, and you use the bullpen aggressively on Friday and Sunday. And, you know, that was, like, Drew Beam's shortest outing of the season, I think it was. And Coombs picked him up, and that's what you've got to have happen if you're going to be that level of team. And I also want to shout out Blake Burke. He is, he's up to 31 games on his hitting streak, just remarkable. And he's really become, just the way he's matured as a hitter over the course of 3 seasons, to a point where, you know, a couple of years ago, if you told me Blake Burke was going to have a 31 game hitting streak, I would not that just wasn't the kind of hitter he was. And now he's becoming a much more complete all-around hitter. And, you know, when you put that in a lineup, you know, you get Christian Moore, you get Blake Burke going there, Billy Amick, like things really start to, like, that's a hard top three hitters that you have to face. And Dylan Dreiling had a nice weekend, and Kavirius Tears, and it's a really good group. And I'm going to be interested to see how they build off of this and everything. They've been a good team, but this was probably it was their biggest weekend to date, I would say. And so, you know, what kind of momentum do they now have pushing into the second half is going to be great to see. But I guess my question, Peter, before we leave Tennessee is, where's Blake Burke going in the draft? Like, how high can Blake Burke push himself?
That's a great question. It's one I've been thinking about recently, given his performance. For me right now, it's a tough one because it's a first base profile, which is a little bit of a knock, and he's not necessarily a premium defender over there like Nick Kurtz is. So for me, he's either... it's so tough and I don't want to linger on it. I'd say for me right now, really, really early on day two, like third round or so, third to fourth round. But it wouldn't totally. Yeah. I'd say third to fourth round for me right now, early day two is where he fits best, but so I would Billy not be Amick totally stunned if a team pops him on like late on day one, if he continues to perform, Tennessee goes to Omaha, all that, but third to fourth round for me.
But you would figure it'd go Amick, Moore, Burke in that order.
I would say Amick, Drew Beam. Oh, for position guys only, we'll leave it.
Maybe we can throw Drew Beam in, but yeah.
Yeah, so all of them, I'd say Amick, Drew Beam, Christian Moore, Blake Burke, Kavirius Tears. And I'm probably leaving somebody out, but those are the four that come to mind and what I think the order will be.
Pretty good group of guys they've got there at the top of the draft. Not bad at all. That's why they're the number three team in the country. Elsewhere in the SEC, we had Alabama and Texas A&M. And this series was really only notable in the fact that Texas A&M avoided a series loss here, something that nobody to this point had done in Tuscaloosa. It was supposed to start on Thursday. They got some rain delay and pushed to a doubleheader on Friday, which A&M swept. And this series, I kind of thought was going to be a little more pitching based. And instead it was big time offense for both of these teams. Alabama, to their credit, comes out and does win the finale on Saturday. But impressive showing for A&M to go on the road and win a couple in Tuscaloosa, because, you know, Arkansas didn't do that. Tennessee didn't do that. I just said this was probably Tennessee's most impressive weekend to date. I think you can make an argument that A&M sweeping Vanderbilt as loudly as they did at home was, but I also think if you wanted to say going into Tuscaloosa and again doing what Tennessee and Arkansas, the teams we have ranked second and third, doing what they failed to do is right up there with it.
Yeah, 100%. And you also were, one, going to Tuscaloosa and facing an Alabama team that was really feeling itself, and rightfully so, after a huge series win over Arkansas. And they, you know, Texas A&M is, you run into the buzzsaw that is Texas A&M. I'm with you, though, that I thought there would have been a little bit more pitching here. And A&M's pitching over the last four games has not been as sharp as it's been over, you know, the course of the entire season. So I'm curious if it's just a last four games thing or if it's actually something to watch. For me, it's solely like a last four games thing. I'm not like worried about A&M in any capacity, but again, like Tennessee, just such a complete team. Like everyone one through nine is such a good hitter. Like there are no easy outs for opposing pitchers. And I could go on and on about A&M. So just another good feather in their cap this weekend.
Yeah. A lot more concern about Alabama coming out of this weekend than I care that much about whatever is going on with A&M. Like you said, like I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, like blips happen. And if this continues to be what they are on the mound, then we can talk about like where that leaves them. But Alabama now 7-11 in the SEC. If you told me though, like that they were going to go 3-3 against A&M and Arkansas, you know, I think I would have been fine with that. I bet they would have signed up for that. You know, of course you would have loved to have won both those series, especially with them being at home, but to split those six games, like that was a really hard 2 weeks, and they came through it. Okay. The tricky part for them now is that three of their last four series are on the road. And, you know, that has not been a place where Alabama has been comfortable at all this season. They're 3-7 in true road games. At 7-11 in the SEC, like they're doing okay, but they've got to find a way to win some road games. Last year, Auburn at this stage was 7-11 in the SEC, and they went on to host. You know, Alabama can make that happen. They have a much better RPI than Auburn did at this time last year. The issue is just, can they handle the road environment? And that's what we're going to find out this weekend as they go to Swayze. You know, so we'll see where the tide go from here. That's an intriguing series. A&M gets Georgia at home, and that's probably most notable. I mean, it'll be a good series, and if you're having pitching problems, Georgia's not really the team you want to face, but the good news is they don't have to go to Athens. But the showcase between Charlie Condon and Brady Montgomery in terms of draft prospects and just the home run race and power hitters and everything like that is that's going to be a fun one this weekend at Bluebell.
Yeah, there's going to be a ton of scouting heat there for sure. I also think, again, that's going to be a really, really interesting series. I have to lean A&M until they tell me or show me otherwise. But I think Georgia's going to give them a hell of a three games. Like, that is going to be a series in which the Aggies are really going to have to grind it out. But switching gears and switching back to Bama just for a quick moment, I just wonder a little bit about their pitching. Like, the Mississippi gauntlet they have coming up with going to Swayze and then going to Starkville, like, that's difficult. And then, you know, you get LSU at home. LSU is LSU this year, but that's far from an easy series. And then they finish it out with the Baseball Iron Bowl. But I'm just a little concerned about the ceiling of the team, given its pitching or lack thereof. Like, Ben Hess really needs to return to form if they want to have, I think, a little bit of a run in them. So I'll be looking for them to throw it a little bit better this weekend.
The other big series is South Carolina hosts Kentucky. South Carolina coming off of a series loss against Arkansas, kind of, you know, like, it happened. There were some close games in there. They came out on the wrong end of the stick against Arkansas, a really good team at home. It happens. But now they get Kentucky coming in, and this is a really big series for the Gamecocks. They got to use their home field advantage here. Obviously, a really tough back-to-back in terms of Arkansas and then Kentucky, but this is one that, you know, if you're the Gamecocks and you're looking at hosting, this is the kind of series that you need to make count. And if you're Kentucky, you know, you lose your first SEC series of the season at home last weekend, and now you have to hit the road. Tough place to play, especially, you know, South Carolina is built for their park, just like Kentucky's built for theirs. So it's kind of a big deal that this is in Columbia and not Lexington. And if you're Kentucky, you want to avoid this turning into any sort of skids. So I'm really fascinated by South Carolina taking on Kentucky this weekend. Two kind of contrasting styles, and again, there's some urgency on both sides.
Yeah, curious to see how Kentucky responds and if they're able to flush last weekend. South Carolina, obviously, good team in general, but they play even better at home. I thought that last weekend against Arkansas, it was a series loss, but they played well for the most part. Like, they ran into Hagan Smith on Friday night. But to South Carolina's credit, they got really good pitching out of everyone on that staff, other than a rare hiccup of an appearance from Ty Good. And I think it was big for them to salvage that. Well, they didn't even salvage the series. They won the middle game on Saturday before dropping the finale on Sunday, which the score was a little bit closer than the actual game. I think it was 9-2 in the eighth. But credit to the Gamecocks, they made it competitive. The offense has kind of reverted a little bit back to the early season, like, lull/woes that it had. But again, like, getting Kentucky at Founders Park is so huge, and both teams are going to be extremely up for this series. It's big for a little bit of different reasons. Like you said, the Gamecocks, I feel like, don't need this one, but it'd be a really nice one to win as far as hosting goes. And then with Kentucky, like, again, the response is going to be really big. Like, if they can go on the road and not just series win over South Carolina after last weekend, like, man, that would be quite the statement. So that's another really intriguing one, as you said.
Let's get a quick break in here before we come back and talk some ACC baseball. Big weekend last week with Wake Forest and Florida State. So we're going to get into that and more here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
All right, so the big series in the ACC last weekend was Florida State traveling to Wake Forest, and it was another really tight series. Comes down to the wire pretty much in all three games, the very late innings, all three games. And Wake Forest comes out with the series win. They're starting to really stack up ACC wins now. That's three straight series. This was the biggest one yet. Florida State, you know, goes on the road and comes close. But not able to come up with this one. Jamie Arnold pitched well in the opener, and they still didn't have the rest of their rotation behind them. But they did a good job against a powerful Wake Forest offense. It just wasn't quite enough. And I, first of all, credit to Wake for, you know, getting some of that bullpen stuff worked out. Cole Rowland is healthy, and that showed this weekend especially. But they've also, you know, found their mix out in the bullpen. And, you know, Nick Kurtz finally didn't hit a home run that Florida State did a pretty good job pitching to him, but, you know, they found enough offense even without Nick Kurtz going nuclear the way he had the last couple of weeks. So I think that all of that was a nice sign that, you know, Wake doesn't have to be dependent on just a couple players that they are starting to find their form and find their full team form at that.
Yeah, it was a really good series for me. Like, to a certain extent, I leave this weekend feeling similar to Florida State as I do with Kentucky. Like, this isn't really a ding at all and doesn't really affect how I feel about them long term. They just need their pitching to get healthy. Like, getting Cam Leiter back in the rotation and getting, like, good Cam Leiter back in the rotation is going to help a lot. I know Carson Dorsey threw the ball really well. Jamie Arnold was excellent as always and actually outpitched Chase Burns on Friday night. But they got Andrew Armstrong back, which was nice. He didn't necessarily have it, but getting Leiter back is huge. But I still feel really good about the Noles. They can swing it. They've got depth on the mound, especially in the rotation. And they're a team I'm really excited about. And then with Wake, like, they're rounding into form at, I think, the perfect time. It was a slow up and down start. It was kind of a lot of figuring out who fits where, you know, gaining polish as the season goes on. Of course, they go out and get shut out by Elon on Tuesday. But I'll chalk that up to just midweeks.
Baseball,
or
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, hashtag baseball. But no, like you said, it was really nice to see, like, a little bit of, like, February and March Wake Forest, where, like, Nick Kurtz didn't have, like, the best weekend. I think he only had two hits on the weekend, but guys really stepped up around him. Jake Reinisch has continued to be really steady. Seaver King continues to swing it well. And then up at the top, Merrick Houston and Adam Tellier. So, like, this is all of a sudden a lineup that looks a lot deeper than we may have initially thought. And I think it's flashing the depth and well-roundedness that had the coaching staff so excited coming into this year. And I think the key for them, again, is, like, they just have to keep free bases to a minimum, because in the finale, like, you walk 11 guys, you yank two wild pitches, and you're still able to escape with a 10-9 win. You know, that's huge. And I think also as well, like, Josh Hartle is slowly starting to throw the ball a lot better and, like, coming into form. So, like, when looking at the now Wake Forest and then also looking at what this team might look like as we head down the home stretch here and into the postseason, for me, it's hard to not feel really good about where they're at and the trend and where they're trending.
I also think this was a really notable series win. It pushed them above 500 in the ACC for the first time, think, all season. And so they are now 11-10. They have 9 games left. It's a relatively manageable 9 games when you look at it. It's not the easiest, but it's you're not asking too much of them to say, hey, just go 5-4 so that you can finish it at 16-14. They're at Notre Dame, home against Clemson, at NC State. Again, not the easiest, but I don't think you're asking too much of them just to say go 5-4 in that stretch. They'd be 16-14 in the ACC at that point. Their RPI would, assuming they don't lose more dumb games like at Elon, just kind of take care of business in non-conference. They'll finish with a top 15 RPI. That's a host. And, you know, playing at home matters a lot. I think it matters for them. One on the road, I'm not that concerned about them winning on the road, but just, like, being a host matters, and they would be tracking towards that now. And they're looking a lot more like the team that we thought they were going to be coming into the year than they did in the middle of March. And like you said, Peter, it's the perfect time for that. My lone concern with Wake Forest, I think your free base concern continues to be valid. I guess my other concern, though, is the defense. It's just not going to be a good defensive team this year. I think we've seen enough to say that. So that is something else that they just have to be cognizant of. I'm a little more concerned about Florida State than I think the consensus is, which is a different place for me to be in, because I was previously, like, way ahead on Florida State. It all comes down to the pitching health. Like, if they don't have Leiter, or, like, right now they're out Leiter, Connor Whitaker, and Ben Barrett. And Link Jarrett said last week that he expected all three to come back this season, which is great news. But when and in what capacity continues to be a question mark. And we are rapidly running out of time for those guys to get ramped up to a point where we're talking about them pitching as starters or multiple innings kind of thing before the postseason starts. And I think that Florida State can definitely tread water through the rest of the regular season, not lose too much ground, potentially even still maintain a top eight hosting spot. But I do wonder, like, Jamie Arnold is elite. That's a great starting point, and they've done a good job building a staff around him, even without those guys. But what is that going to look like, say, in a super regional, if they get matched up against some other really offensive team or a team that you know has enough pitching to quiet Florida State's lineup, which has not happened much at all this season. But I just do wonder, where are they without that pitching? You know, I hope that they come back. I hope that they're fully healthy when they come back and that everything's great. That would be awesome. If it's not, though, I really also hope that Florida State fans can still love this team and acknowledge how much better they are this year. And they got hit with kind of an inordinate amount of pitching injuries this season. It's not just those three guys. Gavin Adams has been out almost all season, and just several players that they thought they were going to have, they just haven't had. And they are still light years better than they were a year ago. Like, the progress has been incredible. And I just don't want that to get lost if this season doesn't quite live up to what it was, you know, at the heights, if those injuries do end up catching up to them. But, like, it's too early to be thinking that way. For now, we can just focus on they're expected to come back. Let's hope they come back at something close to full strength.
Yeah, and I think, one, you bring up a really good point, and it's one that I'm guilty of, too. Like, you kind of forget that they were supposed to have Gavin Adams in this rotation, too, who looked outstanding at times this fall, like up to flirting with triple digits with his fastball, showcasing a big time plus power slider. Like, who knows what that would have looked like in this rotation. And then with Leiter, like you said, like, yes, it's great to hear that he's on track to come back. And Whitaker too, like, getting Whitaker back, I think, like, that adds so much depth, it takes the strain off the rest of the bullpen. Like, that's big for a lot of reasons. But with Leiter, like you said, and Whitaker as well, but like, you have to ramp up a little bit. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, like if he's facing live hitters already and he's like nearing a return and he's going to throw an inning. But like, I feel like, for me at least, to feel as confident as I do in this Florida State team, and a lot of that does hinge on Leiter coming back, I'd like to see him throw a little bit before the postseason. That's hard for anyone to be, you know, first outing back. Congratulations. Like, we are now in game two of a regional and we need you to go 5 to 6 really good innings. Like, that is a tough ask of anyone. So I'm curious to see what happens there. But like you said, for now, Coach Jarrett said they're coming back. They're coming back. So I'm curious to see when that is. And then with Wake, like, getting a regional at the couch is just so huge. Like, they play so well there. And then also with, like, I'm not worried about them going on the road. No one is going to be happy at all to see them in a regional if they were a 2 seed, but hosting at the couch I think is really, really huge. And they're on track to do it now, but like you said, they can't really take any more dumb losses.
The other big series last weekend was NC State hosting UNC, and for the second week in a row, the Wolfpack take down a top 25 team, a top 15 team, as they beat UNC twice. UNC comes back and wins the finale. It was a tough week for UNC. They go 1-3. Their home winning streak ended last Tuesday when Coastal went into the Bosch and beat them. Then they go on the road in Raleigh and drop a couple really tight games. Like, it wasn't anything to be concerned about for UNC. I am like 0% more worried about UNC. Like, of all the teams that we've talked about, like, oh, like, they lost a tight series, like, UNC is the one I'm least worried about in terms of what I saw from them. But, you know, it just, you go 1-3, it's not a great feeling. And then for NC State, you know, they lost on Tuesday. Going into that UNC series, like, they're just so up and down. I don't, like, they're good, but how good are they? You know, but really, credit to them, the last couple weeks coming out and beating Clemson and beating UNC. Those were big series wins. They show you the upside of this team. I just would love to see a little more consistency. And, like, I think it's probably just not coming. This is probably just a little bit of who they are, but whoever has to face NC State from now until they, whenever their season ends, you know, watch out, because they can play with anybody at their best. It's just, are they going to be at their best on any given day?
Yeah, they're a really, really tough team. Credit to them. I'll eat some crow there. I came on here pretty confident last week that UNC would take at least 2 out of 3. I was pretty bullish on the Heels. Still like them, maybe not as much as I did coming into last week. But with NC State, like you said, like, I think it's pretty clear at this point who they are. They're not going to be a tough out for anyone. They're not going to be an easy team to beat. They're going to be very pesky and hang around. I just think, like, the lack of pitching depth is what's going to eventually do them in. Like,
do you want to hear something real quick about the lack of pitching depth?
Yes.
They've lost 4 straight midweeks. Now, the teams they're playing in midweeks are good, but they've lost 4 straight midweeks. And in addition, their last 3 Sunday games.
Oh, that's an uninspiring stat. I know their midweek slate has been kind of tough because I think it's been like UNCW, Campbell, and ECU, but still, like, that's not a stat that invokes a ton of confidence in me. And like,
no, because they're playing teams that they're going to play in a regional right now. And so, like, if NC State falls into a loser's bracket, they're showing you right now, and things can change in the next month, but right now they're showing you that they cannot come out of a loser's bracket, that in a regional setting, they have to win their first 3 games. Otherwise, it's just not going to work for them.
Yeah, 100%. They got to get rolling quick. And the bullpen, it's like Shane Van Dam has been a really nice piece. Derek Smith has been excellent lately. Jacob Duden is, I know, someone they're really excited about who's also been good. But like, they're trotting these guys out one at least once, sometimes twice in a weekend. And eventually, like, that's, you know, it's going to have some wear and tear on you. And it's kind of showed last night a little bit with Duden and also with Van Dam. They both got hit. Granted, credit to ECU. ECU's an outstanding team, and pitching at the Jungle is really, really difficult. But I'm with you, like, the ceiling of this team for me is probably a regional, potentially like sneaking into a super regional at best. Like, the lineup is solid. Like, Garrett Pennington and Alec Makarevich are both really good. They've been extremely productive. Josh Hogue similarly, but outside of those two guys, and like, I know Jacob Cozart is getting a lot of draft love, but he necessarily isn't lighting the world on fire at the plate. I just think it's like a good, pesky, like, good, not necessarily great team. I just, again, like you, for me, the lack of pitching depth is what's going to do him in the end.
This week's ACC slate is a lot lighter, except we do get Florida State taking on Duke. They have to go, to Duke. Duke comes out with, like, they had to work really hard for it. And I continue to have my concerns about how hard Duke has to work every single weekend, really all week, every week. They lost on Tuesday. They got blown out at Campbell, like, not an easy game, but they got blown out at Campbell last night. Like, they beat Gardner-Webb 2-1 the week before on a Tuesday. I digress here. The point is, they beat Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. They needed extra innings on Friday, but they get it done. They lost an extra innings on Saturday, and then they win a tight game on Sunday that they had to erase a pretty big deficit in the final 3 innings, but they do win. And now Duke comes back home to take on Florida State, 2 teams that really could use this in some senses. You know, just Duke has this really wonky hosting resume. Like, they could really just use all the ACC wins they could get to boost that. And Florida State, again, looking to, you know, it's a really tough 2 back-to-back road trips of at Wake, at Duke. Just don't let last weekend's series loss turn into a skid. So an intriguing series this weekend in Durham.
Yeah, not to pat ourselves on the back a little bit, but we, even on, I think it was after the Wake series win on the second week of March, where we kind of wondered a little bit like how Duke's bullpen would hold up long term. Like, they looked really good that weekend, but it's like they used Charlie Bellinson, I think, 2 times. Like, we were just wondering like how it would hold up over the course of the season, and we've kind of seen
back
it,
then, like, he was pitching like 3 out of 4 games for Duke, it felt like.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was actually the number, but it felt like that.
Honestly, I think it was, and we were like, whoa. And it we've seen it like on a couple weekends now where it, like they just like a little bit like they've run out of gas. And last night, like they got their, or on Tuesday, they got their teeth kicked in against Campbell. And Campbell, to their credit, is solid, but like optically that isn't like the best looking thing. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm curious to see how they look against Florida State. Like, it's a really big test. And really just the theme here, like you said, is just how hard they're working. I'm curious, like Florida State right now is, even with the concerns that we have about the injuries and, you know, coming off a serious loss, like they're a juggernaut. And that's going to be a really, really tough test on the pitching staff. And they're going to need all hands on deck. So another big one in Durham.
I don't want to like keep harping on the is Duke going to host thing, because I've been calling that out for more than a month now. But updated on that, their RPI today, as we record this, is 21. That's okay. It's not great for an ACC team. It's probably not good enough for an ACC team, but like they have some time to fix it. They're 13-8 in conference play. Again, like that number is fine as long as they maintain the pace. One of their quad four losses has turned into a quad three loss. So that's a positive step for them. We'll see if it stays there. The newest concern I have, though, is that their non-conference strength of schedule is 212. And no, like that is never a like top line metric that the committee looks at. But if you're on the bubble of anything, whether we're talking about top eight hosting or the making the field, that is something that comes up. And 200 is a problem. It's just another thing that like Duke has all of these things working against it if it ends up bubbly as a host. And I currently projected them as a host. I didn't feel amazing about it, but they to this point have earned it. Now they have to finish. It's home against Florida State, at Georgia Tech, home against UNC. It's not easy, but if they win those games, I do think the RPI will resolve itself and they'll be all good. But like they cannot let off the gas at all right now. They're still in a position where they need a strong finish if they're going to get that host spot. Okay, let's go out west. Let's go to the Pac-12. I too often leave this for last, but we're not going to do that this week. And Peter, was an intriguing week. It's just been an intriguing week. What would happen last weekend, what we have coming up this weekend. And it all centers on Berkeley last weekend. Cal goes out and sweeps Oregon State. And that was a massive series result for both teams. Oregon State falls to 10-7 in the Pac-12. This was the runaway Pac-12 favorite by all accounts, no matter whether you believed in the coach's preseason poll, our preseason poll, like anybody who prognosticates about college baseball, Oregon State was the runaway favorite. They're now 10-7 in conference play. Cal, a team that you heard on this podcast from Peter many times, like, just wait, they're coming. They finally have arrived. They are up to 11-10 in conference play. They've won, after the sweep, they'd won eight straight. You know, they're into the top 50. They are back in the NCAA tournament mix. And like, they couldn't have done it with a louder statement than what they did in sweeping Oregon State.
Yeah, and the Pac-12 is now, like, it gets messier and messier by the day and by the weekend. It feels like there is a cluster up at the top. You have Arizona leading the way at 13-5, impressively enough. And then they're followed by Oregon and Utah, who are both 11-7. Oregon State and Southern Cal, who are both 10-7. And then Cal at 11-10. And Cal, with the sweep last weekend, they played its way into your latest Field of 64 as a 3 seed going to Conway, which that'd be a very interesting regional. But no, with like Cal's a younger group a little bit in the lineup, like PJ Mutsaritis and Jaron Avankula, those are two true freshmen who have really answered the bell this year. And then you have some star power with Caleb Lomavita and Rodney Green. But, you know, I was impressed with how they got to Oregon State's bullpen, which for me is now like become a little bit of a concern, I think. But like Bridger Holmes, who had otherwise been outstanding, the Bears got to him twice. They got to Jacob Kamatz. And again, with Cal, like the key for them the last like 3 years, it feels like 3 to 4 years, like if they just had any semblance, I guess, of pitching, they're probably a regional team. And like, we've seen what they look like in the last 2 weeks or so when they throw the ball well. I think they've now won 9 games in a row, and like the arms have really stepped up. Like, I want to give the offense their flowers, but you know, in Sunday's finale, the sweep, like Tom Mayer and Trey Newman, they throw 4 and 5 innings respectively. Tom Mayer allowed 1 run, Trey Newman 2 runs, both notch 8 Ks. And in the series opener, again, you get some, like, Ian May works around trouble and kind of has a gritty couple of innings. And then Robert Iveson slams the door with 2 shutout. Like, when they pitch, they are without a doubt a regional team. The key for them is just keeping it up. And the Pac-12, again, is so, so messy. But, like, the good news for the Bears is, like, they go to Stanford this weekend. Like, Stanford, all of a sudden, I think its RPI right now is below New. Like, Stanford is, it's just been a mess in Palo Alto.
121.
Isn't it 120, like you said?
Yes, 121. It is, it's not great. It's not great.
I think they're behind New Orleans, and credit to the Privateers, but
that is correct.
It's, yeah, tough times in Palo Alto. So, like, that looks like a very winnable, like, Stanford, USC, and Washington, none of those are easy, but none of them are extremely hard. Like, I feel like I wouldn't be floored if Cal somehow goes 3-0 in those series. I don't know if they will, but it wouldn't totally shock me. But for them, like, the pitching has been huge. Like, when these arms have stepped up, they're a key reason behind this winning streak. So, I'm really excited to see it. I think if they do end up making the tournament, they're going to be an extremely dangerous team. So I just kind of hope they can keep it rolling, because they'd be really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's they're now on a 9-game winning streak, having been Pacific on Tuesday night, just rolling at the, you know, as we move into the second half of the season, second longest winning streak in the country behind only Texas Southern. I mean, it's, They're in a great spot. And like you said, the schedule, like, you know, it's not the easiest schedule necessarily, but it's perfectly manageable. A rivalry series and then at USC is never easy. But like, both of those teams are beatable. And then you finish it off with UW. Like, I feel pretty good about where Cal's at right now. You know, credit to them for getting there. So many times this season, it was like, oh, well, like, they're right on the cusp of something. And then, like, they would get hit by, like, oh, well, like, they're about to, you know, going into the Vegas Classic, we were like ready to like push Cal in, and then they go 0-2 in Vegas, and like, okay, they regroup from that, and then they go to Oregon, and maybe that's going to be the breakthrough, and they lose that series. And, you know, it had been a series of that, but they really have found what works for them right now. So good job to the Bears. The Beavers, they this weekend face Oregon, and we can talk about that series and the rivalry and how this is the last time they'll face as conference foes for who knows how long. They beat Portland on Tuesday, but they lost 4 straight. They endured like that Travis Bazzana scare that we talked about last week on the podcast. He comes back and plays because you can't keep him off the field. They're still dealing with some injuries. They have gotten a little bit healthier, but Trent Carraway's still out. They only just got back Brady Casper and Micah McDowell. There's just more pressure on the pitching staff right now than we had realized there might be, I feel like. And to your point, Peter, yeah, like, it's not the rotation that's the problem right now. It really does seem to be more like the bullpen. And, you know, everyone's allowed bad weekends, but this is now a couple of road trips, you know, at USC, at Cal. The last 2 times they've been out on the road, it hasn't gone well for Oregon State. And I don't really know what to make of that. I'm very interested to see how they play this weekend, I guess, because right now I'm a little confused by where the Beavers stand.
Yeah, they have my attention, and not necessarily in the best way. Like you said, it has been the bullpen, weirdly enough. Like, Aiden May didn't have it on Friday night, but when you look at the big picture with him this season, like, he's been good, not necessarily great, but he's been solid on Friday nights. Like, that's not an issue. And then Jacob Kmatz, again, kind of doing what he's done both this year and his Oregon State career, like 5 1/3, 3 earned strikes. And then Eric Segura with a solid start on Sunday, a quality start at that. But, like, it was weird to see Bridger Holmes, like, have a couple of hiccups. It was weird to see AJ Hutchison not throw the ball well. And, like, those two have been really good this season, especially Bridger Holmes. Like, that guy is nails. But, again, I kind of wonder a little bit about the pitching staff, like, outside the rotation. Like, that's just, like, my biggest concern right now is the bullpen, because, like, again, really outside of Bridger Holmes, like, who is going to get you out? It's like, who can you feel confident in going out there and giving you a shutdown inning or two shutdown innings, and taking some of that pressure off the rotation. So, again, like you said, like, this weekend against Oregon is probably, like, as big of a test as you can find right now in the Pac-12, outside of maybe Arizona, who's playing as well as anyone in the country. But that's a huge test, both for how good Oregon is, and then you have the rivalry element, and, like, it's going to be a very, very intriguing series.
I think it's a big deal. They're back at Goss this weekend. They obviously play very well there. They're 19-1 at home this season, and everyone is going to be very excited for this series in Corvallis. Like, this is going to mean an awful lot to everyone. Point where, like, I'm sure that the Beavers are gonna have to talk about, like, not letting it get to them, and, like, I don't think they would, but I just think that this is gonna be as juiced as that crowd, like, can possibly get, knowing that this is the last time Oregon is coming in as a conference foe, and what that rivalry means up there. So, big series. Oregon is in an intriguing spot all their own. They have RPI issues. They're 62, which is not good enough. The West Coast teams do often get a little bit more of a cushion in terms of RPI, but not always. See last year. And they need to find a way to fix that. They're running out of space to do it in. They are now done with non-conference play, having beaten San Francisco on Monday. So it's just their Pac-12 games from here on out. Oregon at Oregon State, Utah at UW, and Washington State. I guess technically they have a non-conference game against Oregon State still to play, but they just need to win these games, basically. Like, that's all Oregon can do, but they really need to go out and make some hay, and the Washington teams are not going to help their RPI in any way. So the next 2 weeks with 4 games against the Beavers and 3 games against the Utes, like, they need to go out and make something happen.
Yeah, I feel like a series win this weekend would be a huge feather in its cap, just for a lot of reasons. Like you said, it'd be an RPI booster, a huge resume booster heading into the home stretch. And like you said, like at Washington State, like, that can really only hurt you to an extent, especially RPI-wise. But with Oregon, I don't know. I felt better about them after, I think it was 2 weekends ago, when they won an impressive series over Southern California, who was coming off, I believe it was that abbreviated sweep of Oregon State. And then they go out last weekend to Stanford. And, like, again, I hate to say it, but, like, Stanford this year is just not good. And they lose that series in pretty uninspiring fashion. To say the least. And, like,
giving up 34 runs to a team that previously hadn't hit the ball at all this year.
I was going to say, like, I'd have to, like, yeah, giving up 34 runs to that Stanford team is not, like, the biggest, like, again, that doesn't fill me with confidence at all. Like, the pitching has been a little bit iffy as of late. The offense has slowed down. Sans Jacob Walsh, who I think last week went, like, 12 for 17. Him coming alive provides a big boost to the offense, but only if the guys around him can hit. Like, Maddox Maloney, freshman, has been really good. Anson Arraz has also swung the bat well for the most part. But outside of those three, like, it's been a little bit of a tough go. And I know Jeffrey Hurd is second on the team in hitting right now, but He's scuffling a little bit at the plate, which is natural. Everyone kind of goes through peaks and valleys throughout the course of a long season. But I don't know. I feel like again, I'm not like super confident right now in the Ducks. I know optically it looks good. 28-12, 11-7 in the Pac-12. They're ranked. But again, like this series at Oregon State will tell me a lot. And I know the rivalry aspect of it will like probably have the games like play up a little bit. I'm sure it's going to be a really competitive series, but how they look I think will tell me a lot.
Yeah, the optics of Oregon look good, but yeah, the underlying bit of it, it's masking some things there that they really need to get worked out, I would say, and not just in terms of getting into the tournament, but if they're going to play well in the tournament at all, like they need to resolve some of these things. So some intriguing rivalries there out in the pack this weekend. Before we leave the West Coast, though, I just want to, quickly touch on another interesting series, and that is San Diego is hosting Gonzaga this weekend, and that is first versus second in the West Coast Conference. Gonzaga, we talked about probably early in the season when they were at Vanderbilt and at UCLA to start the season. They started the season terribly. They're just 17-20 overall, but they are 12-3 in conference play. They beat Portland last weekend. San Diego, 11-4, firmly in the at-large discussion with an RPI of 31. I don't know what happened to Gonzaga. Like the switch that they have flipped has made this a very interesting series. Definitely has my attention. Really mean a whole lot from a tournament perspective, although I guess it does, because if San Diego loses these games, like losing to that RPI is going to really ding them. But this is one of those situations where like the metrics say one thing, but like I would hope that people could look past it, but I know that the metrics can't think that way, that they just see Gonzaga 120 or wherever they rank them in whatever metric you're looking at, and San Diego loses those games, it's going to hurt them.
Yeah, it's a really intriguing one. And I think what happened with Gonzaga is like once they got into conference play, like they started rolling. Outside of a doubleheader sweep at St. Mary's, they've been nearly perfect. I think its lone loss was last Saturday against Portland. But like you said, that was a huge series win because Portland is also right up at the top / near the top in the WCC standings. And so is St. Mary's. Like the conference as a whole is, it's going to be a fun race down the stretch because you have Gonzaga, Portland, St. Mary's, and San Diego. And I think when it all works itself out, they're all within like a game and a half of each other up there at the top. So that's a really intriguing one. I think with San Diego, like the RPI of 31 is very impressive. 27-12, 11-4. They look really, really good so far. So I'm kind of excited to see how they handle like Gonzaga, who right now in the WCC at least is a little bit of a runaway train. They took a series from Portland, which San Diego wasn't able to do. And I know, like you said, like RPI of Gonzaga, I think at 119 right now isn't like the best. So San Diego really needs this series win both from an at-large standpoint, and then also in the standings. So there are a lot of layers to this one that make it exciting.
Yeah, these are Q4 games, so San Diego has to be careful here. But that's one of those ways. Like the system is just a little screwed up. I don't think it would kill San Diego if they lose this series, but it certainly would make things a little more exciting in a bad way for them down there. So we'll have to see where that one goes. But that is worth keeping an eye on this weekend. All right, let's get another break here in a second, and then we'll come back and talk Big 12 baseball. All right, it was another exciting week in as the Big 12 turns. And Peter, now I can say this, every team in the Big 12 by the transitive property has beaten each other. We've completed the circle. Texas Tech swept West Virginia over the weekend. Kansas State went out and beat Oklahoma State. it was just that kind of weekend in the Big 12. That leads us to, and I should say Texas beat TCU. Those were the three big series results for Tech, Texas, and K-State. Those were all like significant in terms of helping their resumes. We talked on the podcast previously about how I felt like Texas needed it even more than TCU, despite being ahead of them in the standings for a number of reasons. They were able to get that series win. K-State had been down a little bit. Oklahoma State had been playing really well, but they get the series win in Manhattan. But for me, the biggest one was Tech sweeping West Virginia. First of all, it was a sweep. And second of all, I had recently gone all in on West Virginia. JJ Weatherholt played. That was a bit of an open question going into that one. It didn't matter. Tech all over them. They're really hard to beat in Lubbock, end of the day. But West Virginia really could have used a game out of that series.
Yeah, to salvage it would have been big. To win it would have even been even would it whoa would have been even bigger. Man, I like the Big 12 is so hard to figure out. Like that graphic you tweeted out was like a perfect microcosm of like what this conference is, and it's really that literally like what the graphic shows is anyone can beat anyone on any weekend, and it's like I don't really know how like good any of these teams are, and I know I keep flip-flopping on my Big 12 stance, but I think starting at the top, like I do really like Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, especially the pitching aspect for me with really both those teams make it interesting. Like Oklahoma State, especially with a team that is usually so offensive heavy, they now have a really dynamic 1-2 punch in the rotation with Brian Holiday and Sam Garcia, along with an offense that is inconsistent, but certainly capable of hitting with anyone. And Oklahoma right now isn't like they're a very streaky team. Like I think that's just who they are. They've now won 8 straight. I
think
also
they have 4 sweeps. They had never before swept 4 series in Big 12 play, but they also like they've also lost 2 series. It's the strangest team.
I know they are a weird one. Like both of those teams, I feel like can make some noise come tournament time. I was really ready to get super, super excited about Tech, and I actually did after the sweep, like, and especially with how they won too. Like it wasn't a Lubbock special where they won, you know, 10-8 or 12-9 or 15-12. Like they won 6-4 and 3-1. 2 crisp games, pitching really shined, which is I think for Tech the key. And then yet on Tuesday they get throttled by New Mexico in Lubbock 17-3. And again, like take that with a severe grain of salt, just like given that it's a midweek, but like not the most inspiring result. And like really every Tech team in recent memory, they can really, really swing it. Like Damian Bravo, Kevin Bazell, Gavin Cash, TJ Pompey, Austin Green, and Cade McGee. Cade McGee, as of late, especially, he's really come on. But like that core of 6 guys, like that is a, you know, that adds a ton of depth and firepower to your lineup. And I think that, again, like the key for them is just pitching. Like Kyle Robinson has thrown it well. Matt Hoyer has looked really good at times, but they just need some arms to step up around them. So I don't know how much that limits its ceiling, but to me it does a little bit. But like I'm now a lot more excited about Tech like heading into this weekend and just in general after last weekend. So they have another tricky series on tap at Kansas, which I know that you're as the conductor of the Jayhawk train. I know that's a big one for a lot of reasons.
It is really intriguing. Kansas coming off of a non-conference, or no, that was 2 weeks ago, coming off of the series win at Baylor. They also won a big one on Tuesday at Nebraska. So they got some momentum coming into this. The last time, you know, they had an opportunity like this was when West Virginia showed up and they got swept at the start of April. They need to avoid that happening here. They're 9-9 in the Big 12. Everything's in front of them. They closed with Tech, K-State, and Houston. before they visit Texas on the final week of the regular season. It's all there for them to play for. We'll see if they can pull it out. And for Texas Tech, like, this is another opportunity to prove themselves on the road, which where they haven't been particularly good. They're just 6-8 in true road games. They have yet to win a Big 12 series on the road. It's a big opportunity. And if you're Kansas, I mean, you love the fact that you don't have to go to Lubbock. And, you know, I do think this is kind of a, okay, prove it, Texas Tech weekend, because after that, they have the two Oklahoma schools to close out Big 12 play. So, you know, that's not easy. And going to Kansas isn't easy, but like they, at some point you gotta win something that's not easy. And they did a good job of that against West Virginia. Now they need to do it again. The whole conference is just a mess. You can project whoever you want to go to the postseason, basically, with the exception of Baylor, Houston, and BYU. Everyone else feels like they're in play still. Cincinnati maybe is straining that a little bit, but you know, we'll see. So, I mean, the final month is going to be big. This weekend's major series is the Red River rivalry as Texas goes to Oklahoma. Oklahoma swept this series last year in Austin. It's the first time in series history that had happened. This is the last time they'll play as Big 12 foes. That doesn't matter, though, since they move and will continue to play every year in the SEC. The Sooners, like we said, very streaky. They're hot right now. They've won 8 in a row. Texas, very up and down. They are coming off of getting that series win against TCU. I truly don't know what to make of the Longhorns, and they have the strangest postseason resume. It will work itself out over the next month, but if you had to evaluate them today, it's next to impossible. They're 11-7 and tied for second place in the Big 12 standings. Their RPI, though, is north of 60, which is not good enough. They have 8 quad 4 losses, which is more than any other team in the top 100. Like, that is why they have RPI issues. It's a lot to take in, and their next two weekends are big ones with the Sooners and then Oklahoma State. They got to get something. I mean, they are in constant need of needing something because of the hole that they've dug for themselves. But you know, this one, the stakes are high. The rivalry is high. David Pierce is suspended for the first game, at least. I think it's just the first game because he got ejected on Sunday and then suspended after the ejection. So there's a lot going on here, which is great for a rivalry series. You can't ask for more for a rivalry series, but there is a lot going on here this weekend.
Yeah, it's awesome for the on-the-field storylines, like you mentioned, the off-the-field aspect. For Texas, I know they were the last team in your tournament field today. It kind of feels like they really need one of, like, either this weekend at Oklahoma, preferably, or next weekend against Oklahoma State. It feels like they got to win at least one of those series to continue to kind of tread water here. And in terms of who Texas is, I just think that they're okay. Like, on the mound, LeBaron Johnson Jr. has really struggled, which has hurt the ceiling drastically. Like, if LeBaron Johnson was 2023 LeBaron Johnson or even close to it, I think we'd be talking about a pretty different club here. And then the pitching, even outside of LBJ, has been a little bit inconsistent at best. Like, Ace Whitehead and Max Grubbs have stepped up. Like, I think those are two arms that you can feel reasonably confident in, and there are a couple of nice bullpen pieces, but as a whole, like, I'm not overly amped up about the pitching staff. Like, I think that the offense is probably the strength of the team with, you know, you have, I think, 4 to 5 key hitters who have put together really strong seasons. They can drive the baseball, but, you know, they can also, like, they can hit, and I think that's key. But I just, again, with Oklahoma playing as well as it is right now, Oklahoma, it's been kind of a tale of two teams throughout the season. Like, you either have streaky Oklahoma or you have, like, kind of scuffling Oklahoma. And right now you have streaky Oklahoma, which I think is going to be more or less the team that the Sooners are for the rest of the season, or at least I hope so, because they're a lot more fun when they're playing well. So I don't know, like, with it being in Norman, with how well Oklahoma's playing, and just kind of comparing the personnel groups a little bit, like, it's hard for me to not lean Sooners here. Like, I'm a fan of them just in general, but like even more so with how hot they've been. So I got the Sooners here, and then it, like, with that, like, Texas is going to be staring down like a must win series next weekend.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, if you look at just going on the road to Norman is tricky, where they've gotten beat, you know, it's just hard to go in there. They're a good team at that ballpark. West Virginia did go in there. Lamar did go in there. But Big 12 teams, aside from West Virginia, have not been successful going to Norman this year. We'll see what Texas can do. The thing about Texas is that they are incredible at just pulling series out. Like, they are the anti NC State to go back a few segments here. They've only lost the final game of a weekend twice this year. One of those was at the Minute Maid tournament when they lost to Vanderbilt. One of those was a brutal loss to BYU that lost them a series. But otherwise, like, they go out and they win on Sundays. And maybe that was the problem. BYU was a Saturday game. They've only lost one Sunday game all year. You know, they're a really good team at the end of weekends, and they're really good coming off of losses. Like, they don't really let things spiral on them. These are all, like, good points for them, but, like, they just, there's something that's missing with them. And I, what it is LeBaron Johnson being at his best, I guess, like you said, Peter. But a very intriguing series there in Norman.
Yeah, and I, not to move off of that one, because I think that you summed it up perfectly with Texas. Like, I do think that those are two, like, checks in the positive column for them, but at some point, like, they do have to start putting points on the board and notching, like, and adding some feathers to its cap. This weekend's a perfect opportunity to do it. So, like you said, I mean, if this comes down to a Sunday rubber game, like, there's no reason not to be at least a little bit optimistic if you're a Longhorns fan that they're going to pull it out, because I think that there is something to be said about winning, like, games when the stakes, like, winning individual games when the stakes are high, or as high as they can be, I guess, in the regular season. And then one other one that, like, I have my eye on in the Big 12, like, really, I mean, every weekend, like, you can make the argument that, like, four or five Big 12 series are really significant. And I think that's actually what makes the conference a lot of fun. But Kansas State going to TCU is a really big one. Like, TCU right now is right on the edge of an at-large berth, at least according to your most recent Field of 64 projection. TCU, like, we have our major concerns about TCU. I don't really know what to make of them at this point. Like, the offense, it's clear that it's very lacking, but the pitching staff is, like, kind of coming together a little bit, I'd say. Like, they threw the ball reasonably well last weekend at Texas. Peyton Tully's, like, a legit Friday night ace. Kansas State is obviously a really good team. They're in your Field of 64. They're off to a strong start. Well, I don't know if you can even say start. Like, we're 40-plus games in. But they're 25-15. I think they're just a really solid, well-rounded ball club. But what I wanted to get to, and the point that, like, it took me a while to make, was TCU right now is 17-4 at home. And, like, being at home this year has, like, long been the cheat code for any team. Like, Texas Tech is 21-4, Oklahoma State's 15-5, Cincinnati's 15-5. But TCU, very sneaky, is 17-4 at home and just 4-11 in true road games. And, like, for the Horned Frogs, when you really need a series win over a good team, like, you're, like, this is the perfect environment to get them in. So I'm also very intrigued by that series.
Yeah, I think that's a good one to call out. TCU really needs this one. Like, they are right there on the cusp of, you know, like Texas, TCU needs everything they can get all the rest of the way. They're just, you know, they're 8-13 in the Big 12. They need Big 12 wins. That's how they're going to get in the tournament. And being at home has been a really big deal for them. I like the finish for them. K-State at Baylor, West Virginia, a lot of home games there. Going to Baylor is not necessarily a layup, but if you got to pick a place to go, you don't have to leave the state of Texas. Like, they're near the bottom of the standings. Like, I would take that as my one road trip if I was TCU. So I feel like the Frogs can do it. This weekend, though, maybe their biggest hurdle, because by the end, when they play West Virginia, a team that I do think is better than Kansas State, like, it might be too late. You know, like, if they can't get it done this weekend, that West Virginia series might just be too late for TCU. So very, very big series. Let's talk some Sun Belt before we get out of here. Last weekend, Coastal hosted Louisiana Lafayette in a battle of 1-2 in the Sun Belt standings. And Coastal comes out on top. They knock off the Cajuns on Friday pretty handily. And then they come back and win. They split a doubleheader on Saturday. Big, big series win for Coastal. We talked about last week just what that would mean for them, taking advantage of being at home, and how the Cajuns had won 14 straight conference games and were in first place and all the rest of that. So Coastal can feel really good about that. It was a great week for Coastal, you know, combining the win on Tuesday last week against UNC with that series win, really solidified their hosting chances. They are at Creighton for two games this week. They lost on Tuesday. We'll see if they can get a win on Wednesday. It's a middle of a really hard stretch for Coastal. I you know, commend them for taking that trip to Omaha in the middle of this. They come home and play Troy this weekend in another big showdown, but you know, they're looking good. The Cajuns, I'm not that worried about what they showed. You know, we talked about how that was a bad matchup for them. And you know, okay, like they lost, their pitching did not hold down Coastal the way they'd held down everyone else. Like, okay, like Coastal can rake, especially in that ballpark. So I'm not that worried about where the Cajuns are. It is a missed opportunity in terms of, like, I don't see a way into the hosting picture for them at this point, but, you know, going forward, they play Southern Miss, they're at Troy, they're at Georgia Southern, they have South Al. Like, it's a really tough back half of the schedule. What they really need to make sure of now is that they, you know, lock back in and don't let last weekend snowball on them.
Yeah, I mean, I left last weekend feeling a lot better about Coastal Carolina than I did, like, worse about the Cajuns. They're still sitting atop the Sun Belt with a 15-3 conference record. We alluded to it last week on the podcast. Like, it just wasn't the greatest of matchups for the Cajuns. Like, I think if they got Coastal at home, we could be talking about a little bit of a different series result. And I don't want to take anything away from Coastal, because that was an outstanding series win over a really, really good team. But, like, for that pitching staff to go to Conway, just, like, nothing. Like I don't know. It was just tough to... It was just a tough matchup. And like you said, Coastal took advantage, but, you know, it wasn't just the offense that swung the bat really well. Like, Riley Eckhoff set the tone on Friday with 7 innings of 1-run ball. That was huge. And then you saw in the rubber game of in what was a rubber game in Saturday's doubleheader, it was kind of a back and forth affair. It was right there for Lafayette, or right there for Louisiana to take it. They led 10-9 late, but they just couldn't keep Coastal's offense down. Like, Blake Barthol, 2-run double, Sam Antonacci solo blast in the 8th to give him a 12-10 lead in the series win. So, like, I still feel confident about Louisiana going forward. Like, it's a really, really good team. That pitching staff is exceptional. But like you said, it kind of felt like the battle to host in the Sun Belt. And similar to some of these other conferences we've talked about, there aren't a whole lot of easy series in the Sun Belt outside of a couple of teams. And man, Coastal is really in a difficult stretch here. Like you said, the midweek series at a really good Creighton team on the road in Omaha is, like, man, that is a tough 2-game stretch to stick in what is already a tough home stretch, because they're tied right now with Troy at 11-7 in the Sun Belt standings. They have them this week. They go to Southern Miss, which is one, like, an extremely, extremely hostile environment to play in as an opposing team. They go there next weekend, and Southern Miss is also 11-7 in the Sun Belt. And then they host Georgia State, who is 10-8 in the Sun Belt, before finishing out with Marshall, who is, like, the one team I think you'd want to play in the Sun Belt. And by the way, they get Clemson in a midweek before that Marshall series. So really tough sledding for Coastal, like super impressive series win, but I'm just really interested to see if they can keep their foot on the gas going forward. And like you said, with Lafayette, they get Southern Miss this weekend in a really good series, and then they go to Troy. So those are two really tough series back to back. I'm curious to see how they respond. They return home, which I think is huge. I feel reasonably confident in their ability to do it. Like, I love that rotation. It's just a bunch of strike throwers who stay off the barrel of opposing hitters, I guess, outside of last weekend. And then the one secret weapon they have, I don't know how secret he is now, given where he is in our most recent draft update, but LP Langevin in the bullpen has been incredible. 4-0 record, 2.5 ERA, 74 strikeouts across 42 innings. He leads the country in fastball whiff rate. He threw 5 perfect innings last weekend at Coastal with 10 strikeouts. Like, one, from a draft perspective, like, he's going in the 5th-8th round. Like, I think we have him underranked in today's ranking. Like, he's going to go in the 5th-8th round without a doubt. But he has been huge in relief. So, again, I went on a little bit of a tangent there in the Sun Belt and Lafayette and all of that. But I still feel really good about those teams. But it's Coastal who will probably end up hosting if there is a Sun Belt host.
Yeah, and I think there will be. The conference rates 4th right now in RPI. You've got Coastal, which, you know, those games are hard. If they don't win them, they're going to tumble a little bit, but like, they're pretty hardwired into their elevated RPI as it stands, and nobody's confused about Coastal or the Sun Belt anymore. You know, it's not strange that they are where they are. It's, I guess, what I'm saying here. Nobody is going to be looking at that top 15 RPI and be like, well, are the shots really that good? Like, they'll be fine, I think. But they do have to win the games, and the Sun Belt is a difficult conference. And one other series I want to highlight this weekend is James Madison going to South Alabama. JMU is a team that has been elevated in RPI much of the season, and I've not really known what to make of that because we're not used to seeing JMU be there. But they're in the top 30. They are just like the Sun Belt standing set up as the Cajuns in first, and then a three-way tie of Coastal, Troy, and Southern Miss for second. And like, that all feels pretty like normal and what you would expect. And then JMU is leading they're at 10-8, them and Georgia State tied for fifth place. So JMU in the top half of the standings, they've got this nice RPI. They have some nice wins. Like, they went out and they beat Arkansas in one of the games they played on opening weekend. They own a win against Virginia Tech. They beat Coastal once in Conway. They just beat or just swept Georgia Southern last weekend, and that's a pretty quality team down there in Statesboro. Although I guess that series was at home, but still, Georgia Southern, pretty quality team for them to have gone out and swept that series. Now they go to South Al, and that's a team that has some nice quality wins of their own. They're under 500 in league at 8-10, but that's a dangerous team, especially having to go down to Mobile. And if JMU is serious about making the tournament, like, these are the kinds of series they need to show up and show out in down the stretch, because, you know, the Sun Belt is really hard, and there are no weeks off. Like you said, Peter, like, really, I mean, you don't want to play anyone. So James Madison has positioned themselves well. They haven't made the tournament since 2011, but they're on track right now. But this is the kind of series that potentially could trip them up.
Yeah, and I say this like a little bit facetiously just because it was opening day, it was cold, but they're also like the only team so far to get to Hagen-Smith. But again, it was opening day, like, it is what it is. But no, like, they're a super intriguing one, and I'm guilty right now of overlooking them because, like you said, the RPI is outstanding. The body of work in general is really solid. And I think while there are no real easy weekends in the Sun Belt, I think this upcoming stretch of at South Alabama, which is going to be a tough one, but then you're home against Arkansas State, home against Marshall, and then before finishing out the regular season at Troy, like, they have a chance here to put some serious points on the board and thrust itself, I think, you know, absolutely potentially into the top two in the Sun Belt. So they're absolutely an interesting team to keep an eye on.
The whole league. Watch the Sun Belt down the stretch. You'll be doing yourself great favor as a college baseball fan, because I think those teams are a lot of fun, and you're going to see some good baseball there.
I was going to say, and it's good baseball too. Like that last point was the most important. Like, it's not just like a fun conference to watch because it's chaotic right now, and you've a cluster of like six or so teams all within a game each other. Like, they can play. Like, these are really good teams with good players on them. So the baseball will be just as quality as the conference itself.
Hashtag Fun Belt.
Yes, hashtag Fun Belt indeed. Hashtag Chomaha. Even that was a Big West shout out, but my Omaha sleeper had to get him in there.
Yeah, I think
I just like hashtags.
I think the shots were Oma shots when they were there. I don't think they broke that out for this midweek trip to Creighton.
They should have. That would have been funny.
All right. Well, that was a lot. We covered a lot of ground this week on the podcast. There's plenty more though. If you want to check it out over on the website, that's baseballamerica.com, or on Twitter, I'm at Ted Cahill, and Peter is at Peter G Flaherty. So, a big weekend ahead. We'll be back again next week with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, enjoy the projected field of 64. Enjoy Peter's week ahead. Peter referenced the draft rankings, which have been updated and expanded if you're interested in what we're now at 400, right? That's correct.
Yes.
And that's full reports and everything over at baseballamerica.com. Great time to if you're curious about drafts, I hear there's a draft happening this week. It's not the baseball draft, so you still have time to prep for the baseball draft. So if you're curious, if the NFL draft has piqued your interest in drafts, we have more prospect reports for you to check out and draft rankings and everything over at baseballamerica.com. So a lot to dig into on the website. Great time to subscribe if you are not a Baseball America subscriber yet. Peter and I will be back here next week. Until then, enjoy the baseball. For Peter, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you then.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.